This week we will be studying 2 Kings chapter 3. This chapter records how the kings of Israel, Judah, and Edom put down the rebellion by the king of Moab. If you have not listened to last week's message about Moab's rebellion, you will want to go back and listen to that message first. These kings put down this rebellion after God gave them a miraculous flow of water, without which they would have died in the desert. The flow of water came after a prophecy of Elisha, who met with the kings, even if begrudgingly. This would be the first display of Elisha's power on a national and international stage. Your passage for consideration, then, is 2 Kings 3, and if you have not read it yet, now is an excellent time for you to pause and do so. When Ahaziah died and his brother Joram took the throne, regaining or retaining control of Moab was an immediate priority, and I must say, I think that this is unideal and exemplary of the fallen human condition, men enslaving each other for the sake of stealing the fruits of their labors. It is an unsavory business, but alas, it is the way of the world. I suppose that we can take a little comfort in knowing that these were Moabites, not a people renowned for their morality. They had attacked Judah first, and Jehovah authorized a response, but then Israel's king Joram was no saint himself. He wasn't quite as bad as Ahab had been. A fact which the passage supports by noting that Joram had removed Ahab's sacred stone to Baal, which I suppose was some sort of idol. But he was an idolater, as had been his predecessors nonetheless. So with that, the stage is set. Evil King Joram of Israel wanted to put down a rebellion by Misha of Moab. There was a lot of wool on the line. Joram called on Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, for support. Despite religious differences, Jehoshaphat had been allied with Israel. You will recall that Jehoshaphat and Ahab had gone together into the battle that killed Ahab. So Jehoshaphat agreed to help put down the Moabites. The king of Edom, who no doubt did not want instability on his border, also agreed to help. They decided to make their attack through the deserts of Edom. This meant they were taking the long way in. Maybe this was an unsuccessful attempt at surprise, or maybe defense to the Edomites. Moab was southeast of Israel, but Israel would be circling around the Dead Sea, picking up troops from Judah and Edom along the way to attack from Edom's land, which was south of Moab. So they would be coming from the opposite direction than might have been expected. The march around the Dead Sea took 7 days, and somehow they didn't bring enough water. Obviously, being in the desert without water is a dire situation, and the king of Israel began to despair. Jehoshaphat, always the one to look for actual guidance from God, asked if there was a prophet of whom they could inquire. It just so happened that there was. Elisha was nearby. It is unclear to me what Elisha was doing nearby in Edom. Had he moved there for some reason? Was he following the army? Had God just sent him to the desert and told him to wait for the kings to show up? The passage doesn't tell us, but there he was. So the three kings went to inquire of Jehovah through Elisha. Elisha objected. Israel had not been faithful to Jehovah. They had served false gods. They had killed Jehovah's prophets. Elisha advised Joram to go and ask his own gods. But then Jehoshaphat was involved, and they were claiming Jehovah had sent them. So Elisha relented. He called for a harpist. How exactly a harpist would help in the prophetic act is not perfectly clear. Obviously, there is nothing magical in the music itself. Music, and particularly the music of plucked strings, is often prescribed for worship. So perhaps Elisha inquired of Jehovah with some prayer and worship. Or maybe the music just calmed Elisha so that he could better listen. I recall also that in 1 Samuel 16:23, David's playing at the harp would drive an evil spirit from Saul, so maybe that is relevant. Whatever it was, while the harp played, Jehovah spoke to Elisha. The message was a positive, if curious, one. The kings were told that they would see no rain, but that the land would flood with water, the army would have plenty to drink, and they would defeat the Moabites even to the point of ruining Moab's fields with stones, cutting down their trees, and stopping up their wells. And I must interject, that seems like a terrible post-war strategy. I can understand a fleshly desire to want to punish Moab, but a people with no water and ruined agricultural production aren't going to have the best wool production, which ostensibly was the entire point here. These people would be starving and dying of thirst and struggling to redig wells, not shepherding. But such is the nature of coercion. Compensation, free markets with rewards instead of punishments, are generally more effective for both sides of the equation. Regardless, that was the prophecy. In the morning, the kings saw the beginning of its fulfillment. Water came flowing in, so that the ground was covered with water, which I presume flowed into puddles and pools. Everyone had plenty to drink. The first part of the prophecy was fulfilled. On to the second part, the defeat of Moab. If it had been Israel's goal to surprise Moab by attacking from the south, that element of surprise had failed. The Moabites were stationed on the border waiting for them. When they looked out in that direction and saw water flowing from the direction of Edom, they supposed, apparently owing to the angle of the sun, that the water was blood. Now, I have never been involved in a bloody, large-scale military battle, but it seems to me that there would have to be an excessive amount of killing before the ground would run with blood. But whether this was sensible or not, the Moabites had fallen under a delusion, perhaps induced by God himself. I suppose that the lack of rain probably contributed to the deception. If it isn't blood, then where did all of that liquid come from? So blood they supposed it was, and if blood, then it must have been the blood of their opponents. The Moabites guessed that the three armies had fought each other, perhaps accidental friendly fire, as Moabites themselves had experienced in a previous battle, or maybe a conflict between the inherently mismatched allies. The Moabites overconfidently rushed in to seize the plunder, and in doing so, sprung the trap on themselves. The Israelites rose up and killed them, and then moved on to a full invasion of Moab. They destroyed the cities, they ruined the fields, they cut down the orchards, despite the fact that Deuteronomy 20:19 warns against such behavior, they stopped up the wells, and I think we are safe to say, they generally behaved like rapacious plunderers. In the end, only one city was left standing, Kir Harosheth, but they attacked that one as well. The final two verses of the chapter describe Misha's desperate efforts to defend that city. He sent out 700 soldiers in an attempt to break through, but failed, and then, in a last-ditch act of desperation, he offered his son, the crown prince, as a sacrifice to his pagan gods, hoping that they might rescue them. That, of course, is very tragic, but human sacrifice was a very common occurrence in the pre-Christian world. While murdering his son was obviously not effective at securing the favor of the gods, his display of devotion to the cause may have spurred his people to greater effort. They fought so hard that the three kings gave up on destroying that one city, considered their work accomplished, and went home. And thus ends the historical account of an ancient war concerning which I have little applicable commentary. Seek God's guidance and know that perhaps he will grant you miraculous victories also, and take this as another example of Elisha proving his prophetic credentials. To conclude then, 2 Kings 3 tells the story of how the kings of Israel, Edom, and Judah joined forces to put down a rebellion by Moab. When the three kings ran out of water, Elisha prophesied a miraculous provision and victory, which came to pass. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.